A Podshape production.
He was a goofy dad, you know. He did all these little funny jokes, and as a little kid, I thought they were hilarious.
Linda Willimer and her husband Darren dropped her father, John Jensen, home on Sunday after a family lunch. They say he was in good spirits, but the 68-year-old has disappeared without a trace.
At no time has he indicated suicidal tendencies. That fall has never sat well with me, I'll be honest.
Well, the discovery of John Jensen's car outside the Lancelin Beach Hotel is a big breakthrough in the police search for the missing Ocean Reef grandfather.
Look, he did have a bit of depression. And I put the light on and then I just saw blood. All these blood footprints. It was very in your face then, and there was quite a lot of blood, and I was like, what the hell has happened here? And I yelled out, and I think he was murdered. No, I 100%, hand on my heart, believe he was murdered, because this is my dad. This is my story. This is what happened.
This is Dad's Gone.
John Jesper Jensen was last seen on Sunday, the 25th of June, 2017, by his daughters when they dropped him home at his house in Ocean Reef, Perth, Western Australia. The next day, he vanished into thin air and has never been seen or heard of since. It shattered a family apart and driven a massive wedge between two sisters. John had some medical conditions and suffered depression, but the doctor's report at the time of his disappearance said he seemed to be fine and quite chirpy. Head back to the first few episodes to hear more. Right now, we take you back to the moment that Belle arrived at her dad's house. The neighbour is out the front. It's 8:30 on Monday night. The dad's garage door is wide open and there are no lights on. Darren, Belle's husband, is worried that there might be someone in the house. This was the same house that 6 years before Belle found her mum dead. Belle walks into the house and sees bloodied footprints all over the floor.
I was panicking. I was shaking. And I'm like, no, I'm going to do this. And I'm trying to tell myself, handle it better than last time, Belle. I'm so angry at myself for what I did with mum. And I was like, just handle this situation better. But anyway, I was lucky that the neighbour was out the front. She was loving, and obviously very caring and looking after him. And she was worried. You know, she was out the front looking stressed, and she met me there. And I said, will you come in with me? So I found my mum dead, you know, and she goes, of course I will. You know, I'm so grateful she did that. So I went and got the key because he kept spare key in the garage. Went to use it to walk in the house, but the door was unlocked. And that was very unusual. Dad always kept his door locked. So I thought, that's a bit unusual. And second thing that unusual, that there was no lights on. Yeah, we're talking sort of 8:40 probably around that time, and it was pitch black. I was like, what's going on here? Because even the neighbour would say he always had that front light on, because that's where he lived, that front lounge room. That's pretty much where he lived, in his recliner and watching your TV. So anyway, walked in, and what looked like initially, it sounds odd, but sort of feathers scattered in the distance in the kitchen area. And I was like, what's going on over there? And I put the light on, and then I just saw blood. All these blood footprints. It was very in your face then, and there was quite a lot of blood. And I was like, what the hell has happened here? And I yelled out, and the neighbour yelled out. And I noticed a small glass pane was broken. And at the time, I'm like, oh, my God, has he accidentally hurt himself? He's gone to hospital. He's gone, you know, what the hell's happened? I did not know. A million things run through your head. And I didn't want to make the same mistakes again. I just called my husband. That was just the first thing I thought to do. And then he called the police. So, we just waited for them to arrive. It was really, really bizarre. Really, really, really bizarre.
The garage roller door is open.
Yes.
There are no lights on in the house. As you've turned the lights on, you walk in by yourself into the place where your dad
you know, lived post your mum's passing, and you noticed blood all over the floor and a broken pane of one of the internal doors. So it's not an external door, it's an internal door.
Absolutely. And there was a spa bath there, foot spa, set up in the kitchen. I was like, what the? I did not... Like, Dad had actually used this particular foot spa to just, you know, ice his feet, you know, but he'd have it plugged in and he'd have it in the front lounge room sitting in front of the TV in his recliner chair. So the fact that this was set up on tiles in the kitchen area, I was like, that's very odd. That was the first thing that was very odd, and, you know, it wasn't plugged in. And so it had appeared to be like that he'd been icing his feet out on the tiles again. Doesn't make sense if you've got numb feet and you're standing and, you know, you could slip. So that's... And that was full of blood. That whole foot spa was full of blood. And I was like, what the, you know, hell's happened? But initially, again, I'm just hoping, thinking, praying that it is something as simple as he has just accidentally kicked this guy. Also, you know, he's accidentally hit, you know, cut himself and tried to get himself to hospital. You know, and I remember telling, I said to the sergeant, I said, what can I do? Can I help call the hospitals? And they were like, no, we've got one number that we call and it covers all of them. So it's all good. Well,
so you didn't hear about your dad's disappearance or something strange going on at the house until 8:30 at night via text. Correct. That text was from your sister?
Correct.
When did she hear about that there was an issue?
She got the message at 7:02.
Okay, so there was just a bit of time there. So essentially the neighbour saw it early in the morning, saw the door open at the garage door at about 6:45 a.m. and then went to work. And I guess you wouldn't really, you know, if a garage door's open, I don't know whether you'd make a phone call straight away to say someone's missing. You might go, I wonder why that is. It might be strange, but not necessarily any criminal activity. So I guess the neighbour gets home then from work that afternoon. Is that right?
Yep.
And the and the house is the same as it was in the morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's when it hit home. Something's not right.
So police arrive after the phone call from Darren, after you've spoken to him, and they arrive at 9:23. What happens then?
I was met with him out the front, and I felt like initially I'd put his nose out of joint a little bit, I'll be honest, because Darren had obviously said that I don't know if someone's still in the house. So it was treated initially like, oh, my gosh, you know, high priority. And then when he arrived and I said, look, I don't think anyone's in the house. And immediately, before even going in the house, he sort of called it off and gone, no, it's not as bad as we think. You know, there's no one in the house. And but, you know, then they go in and sort of they made his own assumptions on what had happened. I guess, you know, because they hadn't seen what they described as any sort of forced entry, there were assumptions made. You know, obviously I was asked, you know, has he got any health issues? And I said, well, obviously the foot spa was set up. So I did say he had peripheral neuropathy. And I said, but this is out of character. This is not something that he would do. Like, you know.
So at 10:07 that evening, a missing persons police investigation is commenced because...
Right.
Either way, there was a serious concern for your dad's safety.
Great.
What happens then? Do you call your sister?
Well, look, she had actually had major dental surgery that day, that morning. So I'm talking all of her teeth removed and replaced. So I decided to leave her, obviously rest or whatever she needed to do, and I tried calling my brother-in-law.
And how was your relationship with your sister back at that point?
Look, as I said, that there were issues. I guess every family has secrets. Every family has problems that's not widely known, is it? Mm-hmm. So there were certain things that had put strain on our relationships, especially over the last few years. We were still seeing each other, you know, but, there were issues. There were things, you know, our relationship was already becoming a bit strained.
Do the police then start a search that evening?
No, what they did was when they did, I don't know what's called, like inward, outward or something like that. So they have all the vehicles starting from Dad's premise, his property in Ocean Reef, and then they work their way out. So they go and scan the whole perimeter and, I guess that's what you have to try and do in that sort of situation, isn't it? Because we were trying to find a car at that point. And so, I believe, you know, and Hillary's police, the lady there, she was great. She was keeping me in the loop and, you know, keeping me informed and, you know, what have you. But, you know, I couldn't get hold of my brother-in-law and I tried probably about 3 times. So in the end I was like, what do I do? Because my husband couldn't come searching with me.
Because you've got the kids at home, right?
Yeah, they were in bed at home. So in hindsight, I'd gone, why didn't I ask the neighbour to go sit with the kids and, you know, have my husband's support? But there's a lot of things you think of in hindsight. You know, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? So anyway, I couldn't get hold of my brother-in-law, which I just thought was strange because I'd been sent over to check on my father if he was all right. So that was a bit odd to me. But I got hold of my auntie, and this particular auntie was sort of like stepped up as a mum to me when my mum died, and I knew she'd drop everything, and she did. She came straight there, and we just drove all the around the routes trying to, on the way to hospital, because again, in my brain, he was a John Doe in hospital. That's all I kept thinking. Nothing else made sense at that point. I guess that was the most reasonable thing that could have happened in my brain. Do you know what I mean? Like, and we drove around, we drove around the hospital area car parks, and just, I don't know, I was expecting to see the car accidentally have an accident on the way to the hospital, or, do you know, but yeah.
From here on in the story of Jesper's disappearance, you'll see that there is a difference of opinion on what happened to John Jensen. Belle and Darren firmly believe that there's something more sinister at play. They don't believe that her dad just up and vanished. Police and the coroner have a different view. And later in this episode, we'll hear from the investigating officer, Joe Burr. But for now, let's get Darren, Belle's husband's view, on when he visited the house the next day with Belle.
I firstly went to the scene where the foot spa was and the broken glass and the blood, and like Belle, that did not make sense why that was there. Yes, we'd bought him this foot spa and he used to use it, but as Belle said, he did that in his recliner chair in the lounge room and watching his Foxtel and normally watching golf. So I thought that was odd. Also, there was a lot of bloody footprints around from one particular foot, his right heel, and they just didn't make sense. They were going in every direction. They were far apart. They were close together. They were sort of half footprints and then more full footprints. And there was this broken glass, and it just didn't make sense to me how there was this broken glass. I couldn't go up and check out everything because I didn't want to interfere with the scene at all, but the whole scene did not make sense to me. It did not make sense why the foot spa was out there. The footprints didn't make sense to me. How he actually cut his foot didn't make sense, because the police, when the forensics team were there, were both there, and they said, oh, well, it looks like he's been bathing his feet and he's they've been hurting so much he's got frustrated and he's got up and kicked this French door, and then he's cut his foot, and then he's attended to the wounds, and then he's going, well, I've had enough of all this, and then he's driven an hour and 20 minutes to kill himself, which none of that made sense. But I was looking at the glass and I was like, hang on, he's cut the back of his heel. You're saying he's kicked this glass door. But if he was, it didn't look like it was a big 6'3" guy, the size 13 shoe. I couldn't see how he physically could have got his foot that far through the panel or the door to cut it. The only what it made sense to us is if he was traveling backwards that he cut his heel on this door, which then sort of threw the police theories into question. It's like, well, he hasn't walked up and kicked this door. He's somehow broken this glass on the door some other way and cut his foot. And so it, really the logistics of me, and I try to be quite analytical at times, I just couldn't, and still to this day, when I look at the photos, figure out how he actually cut his foot. So it didn't make sense to me. Our initial thought was, he didn't do this. Something's happened and untoward to him, and it's been made to look like he's done something. And it did look like it, but the actual, and no one can still tell me this day how he's actually cut his foot. Logistically, I just don't see how it's happened. And yeah, and why would he be bathing his feet in ice water on tiles? It just doesn't make sense. And So, yeah, the whole scene didn't make sense to me. And we were trying to explain this to the police but it was just falling on deaf ears. It was more like, you know, looking down at us, saying, you know, leave it to the experts sort of thing. And every time Bell tried to say something, like, my father wouldn't have done this. We've been through this with my mother to a certain degree and whatever else, and we've had conversations. And he just almost laughed at Bell and said, well, that doesn't mean anything. And it's like, well,
what's that got to do with it?
I thought, well, it actually does mean something. So, yeah, the whole thing didn't make sense. Not once was I thinking, oh, yeah, he's had a bad day and he's gone off to kill himself sort of thing. And, yeah, and then we find out the car's bound up in Lancelin, and then the story goes from there.
On Tuesday, the 28th of June, the media starts covering the story in Perth. Darren and Bell both make pleas to the public for information or possible sightings of John or his car.
John's neighbours raised the alarm yesterday when they noticed the elderly man's garage open and his car missing. He hasn't been seen since Sunday and his family are understandably worried.
Any information would be greatly appreciated. Very
appreciated. Yeah. His beautiful granddad. We just want him home now.
They say it's completely unlike the widower to go out for so long without making contact. John's wife died 6 years ago. He lives alone. He's described as 185 centimetres tall, large build with greying hair.
And then that evening, a breakthrough. John's car is found in Lancelin, outside a pub.
Well, the discovery of John Jensen's car outside the Lancelin Beach Hotel is a big breakthrough in the police search for the missing Ocean Reef grandfather. The 68-year-old hadn't been seen since Sunday after a lunch.
So at 8:10 that evening, you get a call from police.
That was to say that the media release that we did, you know, had worked. Obviously, that was widely spread. And the car was located up in Lancelin. I was shocked because that place had no connection or relevance, you know, to our family. But obviously I received news like that. So the first thing I tried to do is call my sister to keep her in the loop and let her know to be told that she was already halfway up there. And I was like, oh, okay. So I ran the police back. I rang her back and I said, look, she's actually on her way up there. I remember her reaction was, oh, shit, that's not good. You know, she's going to get there before Lancelin police can get there, because there was a bit of a delay, I think, of availability up in, you know, Lancelin police. And so, yeah, that's what happened. She ended up going up there with her girlfriend / alibi at the time. You know, apparently she said that her friend had had a dream that he was north, so they headed north.
Okay, so
They got there.
So your sister, just for clarity, your sister hadn't been contacted by police before you to tell her that?
No. I guess I was the contact. I was the person that, so they were just liaising with myself, and I was just making, you know, I kept her in the loop with any information, and that's what I did.
Lancelin is a small fishing town, 127 kilometres north of Perth in WA. It's a beautiful part of the world, and I know because I grew up there. As a kid in the late 70s, I would sit outside the pub John's car was discovered at, waiting for my dad to finish his beer, while me and my brothers ate sandboard chips and drank soft drink. It's a sleepy town of under 1,000 people. Around Christmas time, the town's numbers swell to almost triple that. It was originally called by its Aboriginal name, Whangaree, but was renamed in the early 1950s. Lancelin is also a very close-knit town, especially in the winter months, when the wood ducks, or out-of-town visitors, as the locals would call them, leave. It's an unusual place to head, unless you're heading there for a reason. I wanted to know from Belle if Lancelin was a place her dad had been before, or if it was a place of significance.
Look, these friends, you know, that he regularly saw, Ken and Geezer, they loved going on their Sunday drives. And they were close with Dad. You know, they had a really good relationship. So they kept on saying, come on, you know, come on, Jesper, we'll come for a drive on a Sunday drive and come and have lunch with us. And they had actually gone to that Lancelin Beach Hotel before and had lunch there as a passenger. He was obviously taken up there. And there was a second time, they'd visited the Pinnacles and then went and had another bite to eat. So technically he'd been there twice.
Had he ever been to the Lancelin Beach Hotel?
Not prior to that. Only with Ken and Geezer.
This is a question that I think is different for... Your answer will be different to some of the answers that are in the coroner's report, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, could your dad drive?
No. Especially after that fall, no.
When was the last time he drove? If he had have driven on that day, let's just say that... Okay, maybe he did drive on that day on the 25th. When was the last time before the 25th of June 2017 you saw your father drive?
The 5th or 6th of March when he was going to try and play that 9 holes of golf. And this is all backed up by friends and email as well.
Yep. And in that period, had anyone else seen him drive from March through to?
Apparently the neighbour said she had seen him a few weeks before. And I thought that was odd, but, because my sister was, sort of stepped up as a carer role, so she was taking him to all his appointments, especially after the fall, because, he couldn't drive. It was his right hand. Dad was even saying, I have to learn to wipe my bum with my left hand, Bindi, and, he was not driving. Okay, after this fall in April, he was not driving.
Was it a manual car or an automatic car?
It was automatic.
Automatic, okay.
We actually have an email typed up by... sister, which he obviously at this time wasn't even one finger typing because of his barely broken wrist, but it clearly explains that he's not able to drive to well after that date.
Yeah, I think it worked out that he was officially able to drive around the 15th of July.
Okay. And that's primarily because of his broken right?
Correct. Because he was actually still wearing a brace at the time he went missing. So the cast had been removed, but he was still wearing an arm brace, a black arm brace.
Your dad wore glasses?
He did.
Did he? What did he wear glasses for?
Reading and driving,
And were the glasses found in your dad's car when the car was found in Lancelin?
No, they were next to his chair where he used to keep them.
In the house?
In the house.
Belle and Darren believe that it would be near impossible for Jesper to drive 1 hour and 17 minutes from his house to Lancelin with a broken wrist, his medical issues, and what would seem to be a badly bleeding foot. First Class Constable Joseph Burr was the investigating officer at the time of the coroner's report in October of last year.
Yeah, so I'm a senior constable. I work at the homicide squad. We have a team in the missing person unit that's me and 5 others, and we are responsible for overseeing the long-term missing person investigations in Western Australia.
And so you've worked on the John Jensen case for how long?
Yeah, I took over from the previous investigating officer probably, it's around the start of 2018, I believe. We're coming up to just less than 3 years, really, since I took over that investigation.
And so you would have been really important in the delivery of the brief to the coroner, is that right?
Yeah, so I was responsible for writing the report to the coroner, collating all of the information that we had collected and making sure that was delivered without any bias at all to the coroner so that an informed decision could be made.
How long have you been a police officer for?
I've been a police officer now for just over 10 years. 5 years in the UK, and then I transferred over to the Western Australia Police in 2015.
And you've done a bunch of missing persons cases, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've always been in and around missing persons cases throughout my 10-year career. I think it was around November 2017, I transferred to the missing person unit. So it's just been just over 3 years now that I've solely dedicated my time to missing person investigations.
Talk to me about what police did once they found Mr. Jensen's car.
The investigation in those early days changed as soon as that vehicle was located, because what they gave us was the last known position. Obviously, he physically could not necessarily be put there, but there was a reasonable suspicion formed at the time that he had taken his own vehicle to that location. And as such, that vehicle was seen as the last known position. And as such, a search was initiated from that vehicle and some distance away from that vehicle. So that area is a coastal location. The actual car park is right next to the beach. So the search took place on land, and there was a marine search and rescue operation covering the ocean there. So it's quite an extensive search. The mapping that was initiated at the time was pretty extensive, and I believe that area was very well covered by searching officers and supporting units at the time.
There was some CCTV of Jesper's car driving, or reported car, I should say.
Well, obviously we had a last position where we believed Jesper's vehicle was prior to going to Larsen. So that was his home address in Ocean Reef. And then we had his vehicle in position in that car park in Larsen, that was believed to be where he had then taken off from his vehicle. So officers that were investigating at the time, they tried to track that vehicle back, and they managed to obtain CCTV of what is suspected to be Mr. Jensen's vehicle leaving or going in the direction one would believe the vehicle to travel if he was traveling away from the home address, and later some further CCTV from a different address that is again believed to be or suspected to be Mr. Jensen's vehicle traveling up towards Larsen. On this CCTV footage, you can't see who is in the vehicle, and you also can't see the rego of the vehicle, and you can't even, the quality is not great to the point that you can't even identify that it is his vehicle. But obviously what we do know is that his vehicle at some point left his home address and then was located in Larsen. So that is the two CCTV clips that were obtained. They would cover the route most likely or suspected to have been travelled by that vehicle. So although we can't 100% say that's Mr. Jensen's vehicle, I personally suspect that to be his vehicle, and no other footage was located that could suggest otherwise.
And so that footage was obtained via CCTV camera, and obviously timestamps. So it was early on the morning of the 26th of June.
Yeah, it was. There was a slight issue with the second. I mean, I deal with a lot of CCTV, and it's quite vital in a lot of investigations. But unfortunately, quite often the timestamps are out on CCTV systems. So the best we could actually formulate is that the clip where he's leaving, or we believe his vehicle is leaving his home address or close to his home address, we believe that to be in the early hours of that Monday. And the next clip is when it's light in Larsen. So we're unable to get an exact time on that clip, but it was in and around the time you would expect his vehicle to be travelling up there.
And as you've mentioned, there was no way to be able to tell if John was driving that car or someone else was driving that car.
Yeah, no, I was unable to confirm during the investigation who was driving that vehicle or even how many passengers were in that vehicle.
John didn't have a mobile phone, so you weren't able to ping it or trace it or do anything like that, is that right?
No, unfortunately not. That's usually a important investigative action for us, but unfortunately he didn't have a mobile phone. I think he had a hand-me-down phone that was given to him in the past, but that wasn't something that he carried with him.
Joe, were there any other persons of interest in regards to the case of him going missing?
No, I can honestly say that during the investigation there's been nothing, no evidence that has suggested anybody else was physically or even planning any involvement in his disappearance. So in terms of persons of interest, as with any missing person investigation, you have to look at any feasible outcome. So you might you might formulate some possibilities and look into certain routes, but there wasn't anything that stipulated to me or any evidence that was located that suggested anybody was involved.
And would that evidence, if there was someone you're investigating, would that evidence include you pinging their mobile phones to see their whereabouts on the morning, etc.?
We can, if we're doing an investigation and we think that there's a possibility that somebody was in company with a missing person, there is legislation that allows us to investigate and look into the phone records of other people. Obviously, we have to make sure that we conform with privacy law on that. So only if we can start to formulate some kind of possible route or journey that he may have taken with somebody else do we start to have a look at that. But we use these things not only to include people in an investigation, but also to rule it out, so you're not focusing on areas where it's going to lead to a dead end. You know, there's all these possibilities that we need to look at, and sometimes that's a helpful tool for us to lose a reasonable suspicion that somebody else is involved.
So knowing that Lancelin Beach Hotel, I know that area pretty well. There's a caravan park behind the hotel. There's a beach pretty much, you know, maybe 150, 200 metres away, which sort of has some shrubbery and bushland, really, you know, beachy style spring bushes, as we used to call them growing up in that town. Were police dogs used to see whether there are any evidence of Mr. Jensen walking down to the beach or anywhere else?
Yeah, search dogs would have been used, I believe, by SES. They usually use search dogs, and we usually have mounted officers there. The areas, these guys, the SES and the assistant officers and assistant units, are very experienced in covering areas and ensuring that areas are completely saturated prior to moving on. So there wasn't any evidence of him being in the location or any articles that belonged to Mr. Jensen being there. So unfortunately, I can look back at that search and, you know, I can't criticise that search. That search was very intensive and very thorough from what we can see from the report. So I like to think that if Mr. Jensen was there or any article was there, then we would have located it on the day. Unfortunately, we have the dynamic of the marine search. Now, that's very different to a land search because you have the random nature of the ocean, and you can look at tidal predictions. You can look at there is modelling that takes place to predict if something or somebody goes into the water where they may end up, but due to the erratic nature of the ocean there, and the amount of variables such as marine life, such as the tides, it's very difficult to determine exactly where someone will go if they are to go into the water. So that was another dynamic that was facing them on the day, and they searched it, the days of searching, and they did as good a job as they could have done, I believe.
Belle agrees that the search for her dad, once she arrived in Lancelin that afternoon, was without fault.
Oh, look, the SES search up in Lancelin, I can't fault it. You know, I was even told if he was up here, we would have found him. You know, it was extensive. I want to thank all of the volunteers, you know, 70-odd SES people. And, I mean, you watch them all, horses and dogs, and, I mean, it's crazy. You know, you think all these people are trying to help find my dad. And by the time, I always felt a disconnect. I didn't feel like Dad was up in Lancelin, so I was very grateful, and I kept telling the police that. I'm like, there's disconnect. I want you to, can we not have searches? Can we not focus on Ocean Reef as well? Like, but unfortunately, because the car was found there in Lancelin, the focus was in Lancelin, and they were told that they have to go off the first thing that they're told, which was that my dad was suicidal. And I was like, what? My heart sunk when my brother-in-law said, I had to tell him that. And I'm like, what the heck are you doing? I didn't understand. And unfortunately, that's what they were told up there. And I believe that formed the tone of the focus or whatever the investigation. You know, he was just saying, even though 2 days, you know, he's reported from his doctor that he had no suicidal tendencies and he's not depressed, he's feeling fantastic. You know, they've taken the views of one person. You know, and when you have two daughters, I don't think they should do that. I think they should always talk to all family members, especially in a situation like this. If you've got chalk and cheese, like, come on, black and white, talk to both of them, try and find out there's something wrong here. There's surely, you know, one of them saying something's wrong, jumping up and down. And we had a big meeting on that last day of the search with three senior officers, probably. I mean, there's no record of this particular meeting on the file, in the brief, but we were like, what is going on? And we were told, you know, that, I don't know, you got magical powers and, you know, it's amazing what people want to do when they want to give up. You know, it's amazing, you know, because I was saying he couldn't have driven that far and, it was almost like that story of, you know, you've been bitten by a bloody spider and you've got these special powers. It's like, I was like, what is going on here? Like, I was confused. But I was also told that this has never happened before and that was a known suicide location and there was going to be a massive investigation because I was told by them up there that if he was up here, we would have found him.
In the next episode of Dad's Gone.
The initial assessment of the investigation that continues to this day is that no evidence of any criminality has been located.
It was odd that there was no blood at all found from this one particular area. You know, if he's walked out of the house, there would have been blood either through the lounge on the carpet or through the tiles or in the footwell of the car, you know, especially after driving an hour.
It would be prudent now to look back and be able to swab the footwell, for example, but the critical decision at the time was that was not necessary, and I haven't seen any corroborating evidence that says that would show us anything different to what we currently have.
What about your dad's bank accounts? Were they touched?
That's a tricky one. That's a tricky one. I've got to be a bit careful what I will say. And I think it's important to say this, and I have it right, because this is my dad. This is my story. This is what happened. The Friday before my dad went missing, I popped in on my way home from work. He was holding an AGM slip in his hand. And he said, Bindi, this person has stolen my money.
There are over 38,000 long-term missing person cases in Australia, and the story you've just heard is one of them. We want to continue to help bring these emotional stories of ambiguous loss to you so we can spread the word and hopefully get some closure for the families. For as little as the price of a coffee a month, you can help support us to keep creating this content. Just head to our Patreon page. The link is in the show notes.